It being 7 o'clock, I call the, what's today's date? April 28th, Finance Committee meeting to order. First order of business, public comments. Mr. Sherlock, name and address, please.
Certainly, Steve Sherlock, 13 Magnolia Drive, Community Information Director for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio. Couple of questions, not necessarily for answer immediately, but at some point. And then a PSA according to my notes. So first question on the agenda for tonight, it explicitly calls out citizen comments. There are a few here tonight. Hopefully there'll be more as the nights go. They're not on the agenda for Tuesday or Thursday. So that may be an oversight, just as a question, that's all.
I will, I'll do them. Unless you want to redo the agenda?
Just, I think you're starting a hearing tonight, kind of continuing it tomorrow and into Thursday. Right. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to be deprived of a comment, but I think the germane point of getting through the budget hearings is the...
Right. That gives me a segue into the second one, because you probably will, but I wanted to prompt you, at least assist you in making sure that as you go through the hearing process, given that the citizens' comments only tonight, potentially not for the others, et cetera, that we at least understood the citizenry who are here or will be here as to, I'm assuming you would get the questions first for whoever the presenters are, and then at some point in time you'll say, does anybody else have questions? Those are the two questions.
I would
you'll probably go through that. Secondly, just a quick reminder that for the community specifically, while we went through the 6 listening sessions, the archive, video, audio, and transcripts are available and out there on Franklin Matters, franklin.news. I will also do likewise for these 3 budget hearings. So the video after tonight, I'll post tomorrow. It's already up on YouTube tonight, but I'll be posting it tomorrow. A day later, you get the audio. And then by the end of the week, with a little bit of luck, holding the gremlins aside, all 3 transcripts will be available. So you'll have the video. You'll be able to watch, listen, or read for the 3 budget hearings. I'll do similarly for council meeting in May, but May 22nd, 23rd, 21st, 22nd, excuse me, we'll get to that then. So, and then final comment, I respect financial implications about the budget override amongst our residents and fellow neighbors. I totally respect that. I also respect the uncertainty that's around us all over the place, and potentially increasing one day, certainly shifting the next day. But I would also advocate that we need to cover our house first and consider that before you make the vote on or before June 3rd. Thank you.
Anyone else? Anybody on Zoom? There's nobody there, I don't think. Moving on, approval of minutes. I assume everybody's at least had a chance to glance at the AI-generated minutes. I accept the motion to approve, unless there's a...
Mr. Chair, motion to approve.
Second.
Second. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Mr. Town Administrator, it says you're next.
Yeah, so Mr. Chairman, through the Finance Committee, I know usually we start off with general government tonight, kind of go through 90% of the departments, but just due to some scheduling changes, we are starting off with public education. just for a quick outline, I think we've talked about the budget a lot this year, so I don't know what else people want to know, but I did release the town administrator's version of the budget on April 18th. If you can't find it on the town website, it does not exist and it will never exist. We have everything that you could have, several hundred page line item by line item documents. We've got a 150 page narrative. I do want to recognize Carrie and Evan here in the audience, as well as the rest of the finance staff. This year was, believe it or not, the first year in 10 years being here where I didn't actually personally have to write at all. I've always had a great team with Amy and Julie and Karen and everybody on the staff, but to have Evan especially and Kerry as a budget director is hugely important. And I know I'll go back to some of the reforms we did, I know for the schools and the town, both having the second floor with properly staffed HR departments and school business administrative offices, central office, and our office has been a huge help this year. We have new charts in the document. People can go through, they can look through it. We have all sorts of new historical data. People ask me questions every hour about the budget, and honestly, 99% of them are in these documents. So if people take the time to look through them, hopefully they'll be illuminated in new ways. The same thing we have in there, the budget book for the schools is an appendix in there, so if people have line item questions about the school budget, that is also in there. And so we've provided pretty much everything we have in our coffers somewhere, somehow, in the online website. So tonight we're going to do public education, Mr. Chairman. Tomorrow night is public safety and public works. And then on Thursday will be pretty much, you know, everybody else, boards and committees and all of the smaller departments. And then the final recommendation, in addition to a handful of other resolutions that apply to the budget, community preservation, some others that will be on there that the Finance Committee will look through as well. So that's really my quick overview, and happy to answer any questions folks have before we dive into the details.
If I can make a comment, I spent some time this week, I have a little time this week, to sit and go through communities that have this form of government. North Attleboro, Bridgewater, Watertown, I can't think of them all. There is no budget books out there that matches this. None. Not one. It's tough to find out information, but not here. You can find anything you want. Use the search on the new website and it'll find whatever you're looking for. So that was just a plug. Shameless plug for him.
Well, all the whole staff. I really appreciate that because
We get bashed
quite a bit from a lot of people about a lot of stuff. They don't know what's up, this is right, it's wrong. And to be in that class of communities, with some of those communities, which are very large and very old and mature, it's heartwarming to hear that we've got this much information.
Well, I got started on it because our neighbor town administrator is moving to one of them. He's been hired in West Bridgewater.
That's right.
And that led me to West Bridgewater, and from there I went. Off on a safari, if you will.
We'll take it.
Are we ready? Mr. Jaguar.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for having us. Just to set the context for the presentation, I know in previous years we've bombarded you with many, 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 many slides. We did our best to keep it to mid-20s. I know that seems like a lot. Some will fly through. What's unique this year in context, and I want to give credit to not only Mr. Mercer, but Jamie Helen as well, for the work around the listening sessions and the way that we structured this budget season to get information out. So as we present information to you tonight, we realize that many have seen it. We'll do our best to balance newcomers who are just watching for the first time with the fact that many of you have sat through many of these presentations. So we purposefully created this one for FinCom to have some of the key pieces along with some of the detail, if you wish, on the line by line.
Can I just, this budget is based on a past override. Is that correct, Jamie?
This
budget we're looking at
is
assuming a past override.
Yep. Yes.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Very good. So yes, the budget is based on with a past override. So thank you for clarifying. I want to also thank my team. I'm joined by Ms. Velotti, our school business administrator, also Dr. Bob Duchess here, and Mrs. Paula Morano. So we have our former school business administrator and consultant, and our assistant superintendent, and also our school committee chairs here, Dave Callahan, in support. So I just wanted to thank them and the entire team. So without further ado, as we move forward, can hit that slide. All right, so just the theme is around laying the foundation for success. Ultimately, there's a lot of change happening in Franklin Public Schools this year, and we really have looked at how do we reallocate and prioritize our resources, how do we rework based on the decisions we made, and ultimately create stability within our systems. So we hit on those key pieces. Yep. I can even work it too. So basically, real quick, you know, here we are, the 13th time we've discussed our budget. We've provided, you know, multiple iterations. So just wanted to kind of frame this for everyone. It's been a ride. So just a little bit about us. Many of you are aware, as we lay out our school, we're approximately 4,589 students. And you'll see the breakdown. This budget was built on next year. So 7 schools, looking at the different layouts. You can see the number of students in each of the buildings as we've kind of break this down. We'll get into more detail as we move forward in the presentation. But this is kind of, if you're looking for one slide with an overview, to just provide some kind of high-level information. I'm getting old. This is Christy Kirschy. I had her as a student back in the day at Annie Sullivan Middle School. You've seen the portrait of a graduate. This is the guiding North Star for us as a district. If I had to key in one slide, if you said to me, if you were asked as a member of the FinCom, hey, what do I need to know? The executive summary slide. We've provided this at each of the listening sessions as well, but basically it breaks down. The budget request is for $80.3 million. You'll see here that it's a $2.9 million increase, or a 3.78 over our FY25 budget. And in there you'll see that if you break down that 3.78, it's a 3.1 for operational with a 0.68 for the health insurance increases. So ultimately, when you add the grants in, it's an $88.8 million budget. As Mr. Conley pointed out, it's dependent upon solving our town's structural deficit of $3.8 million. So just some key facts around just the staffing adjustments that we've made without adding additional FTE, and we'll talk through some of the numbers on some of the reorg and the cost avoidances or savings. And ultimately, one thing that we couldn't avoid is some of the rising costs associated with transportation and different aspects of our work, health insurance, and some of the special education costs. And, you know, we tried to stay within a budget of having reasonable class sizes within the district across the way if we were making such a big change. So moving forward, here is a slide that basically shows we were asked about this. We've been asked many times. If we made no change and the school committee made no decision to reorganize our district and shift students to different schools, put them in our most modern schools that we have within Franklin, we'd be looking at a request of 7.9, and it would have been a $6.1 million. But with the reorganization and looking to maintain our levels of service, that's where you get the budget that's before you on that executive summary slide with the that's been approved by school committee as we move forward through this process, and that's where that 2.9 comes in. And just, I'll leave this. This is more for people who read this after the fact. But basically, we looked at staffing adjustments based on our new configuration, keeping our class sizes within reasonable ranges, and then ultimately having the student supports that we've worked really hard to build over time and not see those supports decline, because we still have the same number of students we have this year. We're just reorganizing them. So you still need the same types of people supporting kids and teaching kids. Okay,
so here you see the cost drivers and our budget obligations. We have fixed obligations, salaries, benefits, health insurance. You can look to the right. The right table has the transportation cost increase over FY25. Same for special education, health insurance, and salaries. Despite all the cost increases, strategic reallocations allow us to sustain essential student services without increasing overall FTE.
So just one of the items that you saw is our drivers is transportation, and you can see that the cost of transportation for our students is going up by 12.2% this year when compared to last year. That is including the reorganization and considering the number of students that will be riding the buses. There are more students that will be living more than 2 miles away, so ridership will be going up at the elementary level. But we feel like we are able to manage that with the existing routes and more strategically assigning students to buses and creating routes through this process. While students may be on the bus longer, we're working towards keeping that at a reasonable length.
My favorite slide. So special education. Special education is the cornerstone of our mission to ensure that each and every one of our students has access to the support services and resources they need to access the curriculum and just achieve both social, emotionally, and academically. And it's we do this by having strategic planning and as well as in-district innovation, which goes to our next slide, everybody's favorite slide. So we are very fortunate in this district. We have worked really hard to develop in-district specialized programming for our students. If we have a number of students who require specific programming based on their disability, and we have a cohort of these students, we develop a program so that they can all receive this in a smaller environment. So we have, currently we have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 programs, specialized programs throughout the district, pre-K through 12 plus. And by having these programs in district, we are able to save money. So not only is it better for students because they get their education within their school communities, with their neighborhood peers and siblings, but also it's a cost savings. And as you see here, it's a $5.1 million cost savings by keeping the kids in district. So I targeted these goals, REACH, our NEC partner program, and STRIVE as our programs, because typically the profile of these students are that in which that they might need support in an out-of-district program, which costs much more money than having them to stay in district. So that's why I kind of targeted these five programs. But we have other specialized programs within the district, but typically we can support those students within the district even if we didn't have those specialized programs.
As part of those special ed costs, we also have to transport the students who are in out-of-district placements. You can see that in FY25 that went up by 11.7%, and this year it's going up again by 4.5%, which is a lesser amount. The reason that it's going up a lesser amount is not because the costs are less per student, but because Paula and her staff have done a fantastic job of creating programs internally so that we have fewer students that we're having to transport, in addition to students aging out of programs at age 22. So the combination of those two things are what are keeping the cost at only 4.5% higher rather than a number like you saw last year.
I want to make a note on that too. When we've come before the town for capital funding, special education bands have been a part of the requests for the past 3 years, at least four.
Almost every year.
Every year
that I can have one.
Yes. So the fleet of vans. It's about maintenance, but also around making sure that we have to have in-district transportation if we have programs and we increase student enrollment. And that's where sometimes I'm just trying to draw a connection, because this committee has is aware of some of the capital costs that are associated with in-district programming. And that's what we mean when we say we need a special education van. It's to support the internal driving within Franklin from someone's home to a school in Franklin where we have a program that meets a student's needs. So, all right. So just get a little bit about this. We've talked a lot about the reorganization. I know this committee is fully aware. I know the town administrator and the folks in the crowd have seen this, but big high-level overview. We've made some changes that include unifying our middle school under one roof, creating two elementary complexes, K to fives, and then having our pre-K in two locations, because we need to take back the middle school space that's currently at one of our middle schools. So moving forward, just the visual on the left gives you kind of a sense of the schools and kind of how we've moved things to put people. But on the right, you'll see just some of the costs associated with when we did this. We were able to look at our staffing needs based on caseloads, class sizes, needs across the district, and we were able to reduce FTEs. FTE, for those out in the crowd, is a full-time equivalent. It's a position. It's basically a full-time employee, and they could be anything, anywhere from a teacher to an administrator, whatnot. So we were able to make reductions in that area. And also with that comes a reduction in the healthcare costs associated with those employees. And then you can see operational expenses because we consolidated some of our schools. You don't need so many duplicates of certain things. So when you put that all together, that's about $3.1 million. So you may recall the slide I showed earlier that talked about if we had reorged, it would have been 6.1, right? So that idea of it being the number it is today is a result of that. And just to add a little bit more for people who might just be watching, you know, reading this online, it shows the FTE positions and the types of positions that were reduced as a result of consolidation. Okay. This is not, I'm not going to go through this, but I was asked the question, you know, what are the class sizes? How did they shake out? So this is more of a reference table, but it's in there because the question was asked last year at one of our public meetings around class sizes. So if you look at this, this is basically an illustration. At the time it was created, if you take the number of teachers that we have, for example, in the elementaries, and you assign students by grade, you know, to a classroom, and you keep it within range, we were able to land here. I think this is more about showing some data to kind of support the idea of the changes that we've made and trying to align the district to make sure that we have suitable class size ranges for our kids. Just behind the scenes, this is more of a shout out to Ms. Malotti and the business department and everyone involved, and it touches student services, teaching and learning, but we also had to realign our budget. So one thing that you're all very aware of is we moved our budget timeline up to January in an effort to be as aligned with the town and their kind of cycle of budget approval. We did that in a year where we also were reorganizing, so it wasn't just a matter of moving a timeline up and doing what you normally do. It was about kind of converting apples to oranges and saying, and we'll move it up. That included not only converting the financial data from 8 schools right into the 5, but also, oh, that's pre-K to 8, but also looking at making sure that the chart of accounts aligned with our institution that has oversight over this, which is the Department of Education, making sure that our budget books reflect the new schools, and then the major task that we've had and we continue to work through is we had to place over 3,000 students, and then we had to place over 600 employees in new buildings and transfers and whatnot. So all this was happening behind the scenes. I want to give credit to my entire team for the tireless efforts they put in to make that happen. But it is an undertaking, and we still have more to go, but we're making the progress that we need to make. So. Just moving forward to the final section.
Just a quick question.
Yeah.
Do you want questions during or strictly after?
We can do whatever you prefer as chair. We have one segment left and then we're done. But I can certainly pause there and take questions now if you'd like.
I have one question.
Sure.
What percentage of these total population in schools is special ed?
Total population of
so you have 4,500 plus some
yeah, it's about 20%. Yeah, it's about 20%.
Okay. 20 to 20. How does that compare to our peer schools? Do we have any sense? And you might not know that off the top of your head.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I haven't compared the numbers in a while. Mm-hmm. But I would say it's an average about 18 to 20% in our.
Okay,
peer
so we're kind of.
It's higher since COVID. We've seen percentages go up since.
But it sounds like that's true everywhere. In most places.
Correct.
We could verify that.
Yeah,
if
I
you
could.
Too.
I could.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Good question. Do you want to? Are there any other questions before we?
Anybody think of it before?
Oh, wait, no, it's fine.
No, we're good. Okay. I think. Everybody?
So here you have the school salary budget line. So. You see a column on the left with the school's names, FY25 budget, the proposed level service budget for FY26, and the increase or decrease related to the previous year. You can see the highlighted schools, the middle schools. We converted three middle schools to one middle school, so you see a decrease there in $1.4 million, which is mostly due to staff reductions. and the elementary schools are all combined. So it was our attempt to get a true comparison of all the elementary schools in FY25 and FY26, and you see the bottom line for FY25 and 26 and the difference, which represents a 3.79% increase over FY25.
Quick question on that?
Yep.
The transportation costs went down to zero. Can you just, I feel like I'm just not understanding why. From the budget to the proposal.
Oh, so here we had a transportation coordinator in FY25. That position.
That was a coordinator.
Exists.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those are salary
yeah.
only.
Got it.
We're gonna get into the expenses yeah. line next. And there they are. You can see all the expenses by schools and departments. You see the schools listed first, and you have the athletics department, superintendents, teaching and learning, central office in general, human resources. Then you get your business office, school committee, transportation. You see the increase there, contractual obligations, and student services, which is our special education department. You can see the FY25 total budget request, FY26, the increase, and the percentage increase over the previous year. And here you see the grants. I have the historical data back to FY23. You can see FY26 is pretty similar to FY25 because we don't have the actual numbers. But it's usually it's kind of in that same amount. It's just a decrease of 1.5% over FY25. And here is, you see the revolving funds. You have by each funding source, technology, circuit breaker, pay to ride, which is the transportation. The parking fees, we first instituted parking fees at the high school this year, so that's why you don't have any information previous years. School lunch, ECD situation, lifelong learning solutions, student activities, and athletic. So you can see FY23, 24, FY25, what was budgeted, and FY26, what was proposed. And the percent increase or decrease compared to the previous year.
So this budget represents our attempt to try to create as much stability as possible with our student services and what we're offering. So if you look at the left-hand side, you can see some of the goals that we set off at the onset of this budget cycle was to try to look at a time where there's a lot of change happening at Franklin Public Schools and within our town and our community, and trying to look at how do we continue to try to preserve some of the things that we know to be good for education. And also look at some of the critical cuts that we had to make over the summer due to the failed override. This budget also included restoring some of those positions that were previously cut. And also looked to, this budget also represents a reduction in costs to transportation and fees for families. Built into this particular budget if the override were to pass, because we made a commitment that if, you know, families were going to be looking at either fee increase, which they did see as a result of the failed override, we recognized that an override passing and keeping fees where they were didn't feel like the right strategy for our families and our constituents, so that's part of this as well baked into that. Also, just looking at the services that we do have, the counseling support we have within our buildings, the nurses we have, the educators, looking to try to maintain our supports that we've spent a long time trying to build up over time, and we know our kids need. And ultimately looking to reallocate. We saw this as an opportunity to say, what are the needs of our kids, and how do we look to reallocate some positions? And while also we did show a reduction of staffing, we also reallocated some staff to be better served to support kids within that. So we were able to accomplish two of those pieces. And finally, just a matter of just trying to make sure we also know the potential impacts of underfunding. So if we did not receive the funding that we have requested. It would result in some pretty detrimental cuts. And you'll see there, you know, the school makes up 54% of the town's structural deficit. So that's about $2.2 million, right? And in there, we would be looking at staffing reductions, higher class sizes as a result of that. You look at fewer co-curricular offerings. And then ultimately, some of those restored positions that we're able to include back would be gone. And ultimately, the user fees we wouldn't be able to reduce. We'd have to keep and maintain the high fees that we are offering. And ultimately, there'd be other areas, such as the you know, mental health services, counseling, other pieces that would be at stake. And that's just the school's cut if a failed override happened in a structural deficit. So I say that as a factual just statement, that these are the areas in which we would have to. And I know people have asked for more specifics, but I also am sensitive to my employees to not get into such specific detail that someone working for us now hears in a public conversation that their job's at stake. I don't think that's respectful. So we've tried to provide as much detail as we can around this, but there's the number and there's the areas in which we would have to reduce, and those would be part of a larger conversation with the school committee with our team as well. Around the corner on our presentation.
Just real quickly, I'm not going to go through this other than to say that over the last few years, while Franklin continues to spend less than a significant portion of the communities in the Commonwealth, that number, the difference between the higher spending districts and where Franklin is getting closer. We are catching up to others as the town has appropriated a little bit more money each of the last 2 years, or last year, and what's proposed for this year that is starting to close that gap. So that's a positive thing and will only help the students of Franklin.
I have a question on the average. Is the average just add them all up and divide by the number of districts, or is there some weighting? I may miss the name. I think Hull spends like $41,000 a kid. Maybe it's not Hull. I don't know the town.
There are
a bunch that are
very small communities that, you know, want to, like Provincetown.
Well, maybe that. They
have their own school for 150 students, and they have all the positions. So their costs are much higher. It's a ranking. It's not. I wouldn't really say it's an average. They take 356 communities and school districts, and they rank them, how much they spend, and where we are in comparison. So no, they're not adding them all up. They're looking at your rank as a percentage of the 356 school districts.
I mean, those things just skew everything.
Well, they would, but you know, their numbers are much, much higher. Agreed.
So in a similar vein, I'd be curious to see it ends up being trend lines. Like, yes, it sounds like we're getting closer to the highs, which is not
to the, well, to the average.
To the average, which is great. But is that because everyone is coming down? Because you know, you see how many overrides are being requested across the state. You know, so it's great that we're getting closer to the average, but is that because others are also feeling this pressure, and are we going to get pushed back if, do you understand what I'm saying?
I think it's twofold. I think it's both the fact that they're feeling the pressures that everyone is, but I think it's also, if you look historically, while there have been outlier years in Franklin, historically it's been around 2.5% as an increase most years. And last year, I think, was 5.something% as a town appropriation. And then this year, we're looking at the 3.78, which is much larger than it had been in most years. So I think that's why you're seeing us come closer to the average over time.
So just so to rephrase it so that I understand. So we're both doing a little bit better in terms of how we're doing.
We're committing a little bit more. I won't say we're doing better, but we're committing more, and I would argue at the expense of other things, but that's a separate conversation.
Right. So we're committing a bit more while others are
staying the same or committing less.
Same, you know, while they probably pursue their own paths.
Challenges, right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And this is required net school spending. And again, as the town commits greater resources, our net school spending is going up. Again, we are at 20, we are spending 20.6% more than what's required. But again, the average is 41%. And again, that's getting closer. That's narrowing as well for the same reason that was mentioned previously.
Is the per pupil cost, I don't remember the number, but is that, does that include state aid or not? Or is that just local money?
It's what we're spending. It doesn't look at where the revenue is coming from. It's looking at what you're actually spending. It's not revenue based.
So we're happy to answer any questions and go back. And thank you for your time.
I had a couple questions. One was when you were going through the cost drivers, which was really helpful, and you laid out the different pieces, there was this, you listed out like the departments and central office on both the slides for both salary and expense line items were just up kind of higher percentage wise. Like where are they? Like it's 18% on this slide and then their expenses are up too. Can you just give a little bit of color of what that is?
I can. We also, during this reorg, have shifted things that lived, so if printing, for example, lived in one line that needed to be shifted, so we made notes on the line by line that show some of the shifts because we figured these were the kinds of questions. Do you want to take that one?
So for the expenses, just like Mr. Jagir mentioned, we did have all the postage, lease, and the copiers, lease, and maintenance live at the school's at the school level. So we just shifted that to the central office. And in regards to the salary lines, we did shift some of the positions. Some of the ESPs, for example, we did shift them to central office for now because we were in the process of
identifying
where they would go. Yeah, so we hadn't assigned them yet by the time this was done in February, January, right?
Correct. So that'll even out with other lines when they get assigned.
Yeah,
it will.
Got it. Okay. And then my other question was talking about, I like how you always say like, oh, we're up 3.1, I'm getting the numbers wrong, and then 6.8 on the benefits. We've talked a lot about benefits. We're hearing transportation here a lot today. What is driving those cost increases? Because we know benefits is what it is. Salaries, we know what's driving that, but what's driving the transportation costs? And is there anything we can do to mitigate that? Because I see it's like kind of projected to continue to rise.
So I'll let others answer as well, but I will say when we provide industry programming, for example, that gives us a lot more control because we employ the drivers, we employ, we own the vans, and we're able to work within the fuel, through the town work to make sure that we're, so we really can get a lot of control over those situations. Transportation outside of the district is not, we don't provide that transportation. I think if you want to hit on van and then we can come back to the second part.
Well, the big yellow bus, the transporting the students, that's a contracted service. We put that out to bid. We had a 3-year contract that was renewable for 2 years without going back out to bid. And those increases were what was in the awarded contract. So our plan is to go out to bid a year earlier than the 5. We're not going to automatically renew for the 5th year. We're going to go out to bid for that 5th year to see if we can do a little bit better moving forward.
Are they giving you any color into what's driving those increases?
Well, they put out a bid spec 4 years out from when they're putting it out, you know, when we request it. And they're making assumptions about insurance costs, the cost of replacing their buses, maintenance, fuel. So they're going generally to go a little to the higher end the further out you go. You know, the first 3 years they were fairly moderate increases, and then the further out you're asking people to bid the work, the higher that rate's going to be, which is why we probably, if we weren't doing a reorganization, contract negotiations, accelerating the budget, we might have tried to go out to bid a little earlier.
That's it. Thank you.
Just to follow up on that, Mr. Dutch, so you are going to go back out requesting a bid. That's not this year. That's
for FY27.
Okay. Yeah, I was just asking because I know how much uncertainty there is in the market right now. It'd be a particular challenge to try to get.
Right.
Correct.
My question was a little bit about transportation too. So I see it's 1.8 for the yellow bus, but it's also 1.8 for the in-district, right? There was an in-district busing, 1.8 as well, for only 20% of the students. I just want to make, 20% of the students have special education transportation needs potentially. I just wanted to make sure I was understanding it, but the budget is virtually the same dollars.
Yeah, those are the transportation costs for out-of-district students. So we're not using our own employees, we're contracting out. And we just went out to bid for those contracts as well. And again, same drivers, salaries, insurance, fuel.
Oh, so this isn't our buses that are in the capital budget?
No, no.
These are contracted services to bring out of district?
Correct.
Okay.
Because we don't have a big, large enough fleet to transport our own students out of district.
Okay.
Anything else, guys? Must have done pretty good.
We've seen it over and over.
Appreciate that. I just wanted to say last final words. Just want to thank you all. And I appreciate the questions, but also the support. I know this cycle particularly has been very, and we've really engaged. And I know we have three members of your committee who were part of the Joint Budget Subcommittee, kind of working through this process throughout. So, on behalf of the Franklin Public Schools, we appreciate your support, your questions. I think Mr. Conley, you've pointed out a few times that this is where you come to kind of walk through the details and make sure that you have the information you need. And we appreciate the job and the work that you guys are responsible for doing. And as a taxpayer and a parent and a homeowner in town, I appreciate the responsibility that you guys have to do this. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Well done.
Thank you.
Jamie, you have anything else? Just one comment. The records show that we had one resident here this evening. The rest are all department heads or employees. And
you got five people on the Zoom.
George, you?
Yeah, but one of them is Tom Mercer.
And one's
not.
He's a people, yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter.
An important people, but a people.
He's a resident.
So,
George.
I just listened to the buzz, and I shouldn't do it, but I hear it. Never. Oh, they didn't tell us.
Don't listen.
I know. Right. Nothing else.
George.
Go to the town website. It tells you everything.
There's absolutely everything there, and I told you it's better than most, if not all. Motion to adjourn.
Wait, can I ask just one question?
Absolutely.
Am I allowed to address something Mr. Sherlock said at the beginning?
Yes.
Am I allowed to do that?
We'll do committee comments.
Okay, I'm just curious. You in the last thing you said before you got off the microphone was, we need to cover our house first. My Boston accent's butchering that. And I just wanted to, before we make the vote, I'd like clarification on what you meant by that. That's okay?
Yes. Clarification comes from some questions that I've been hearing in other channels, even amongst the senior center, and et cetera, that because of so much uncertainty, we can't afford, on the one hand, nor should we spend more this year because of all the uncertainty. My argument is, if all of that's going on, the services that we provide as the town are going to be more needed if those other uncertainties actually happen. And thereby, we should be taking care of ourselves first.
Thank you. That's very helpful because I was a little bit uncertain. That's very helpful.
I'm in a delicate position reporting, but understood. That needs to be stated too.
Yep.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
I do. That brings up another question in my mind. Are we affected by the federal funds freezes that are happening? to any big extent, small extent, or at all?
At this time, we currently, I think, receive about $1.5 million in federal funding. At this point, we heard that nothing has been said to be knock on wood. Things can change in an instant, as we know, but ultimately, at this point, I think there are other states who receive more federal funding, and I don't believe that that's in danger. I haven't heard that it's in danger. Anything to add on that, Jamie?
Yeah, through I think that the biggest concern is, first of all, I think, as I said at many budget meetings to date, the town in this operating budget, you know, there's not a dollar of federal money in here. So for people that are reading the news, and certainly rightly so, concerned about what's going on, there's nothing that we're hearing from DC that's going to affect a job or a thing right here, right now. I think the school money is grant money. You know, certainly there's road projects that'll dry up. There's other stuff that'll go away. But a couple factoids, just for the record. One, the budget that was approved by Congress and the President last October was a six-month budget. The budget they just approved in March in Congress, signed by President Trump, was the same number that the previous administration had done. So what does that tell you? A lot of what you're seeing in the press is a lot of smoke and mirrors. Some of it is legitimate. A lot of it's people just leaving and buying out their job, right? A lot of it's in different factions. So, but I can say that a law was passed by this Republican-controlled Congress and President Trump at funding the federal government at the same amount of money that they did the 6 months before. So that's actually a good thing. I think the biggest concern I have is less your question about individual employees or jobs. Certainly the cuts to the Department of Education will be of concern in some way, shape, or form. But the bigger concern the town, state of Massachusetts has to watch is around Medicare and Medicaid. $16 billion of the $63 billion state budget, 27% of the state budget is funded through Medicare and Medicaid alone. So that, to me, is really the biggest thing that the American public or people in Franklin should look for, people in Massachusetts. That's really what, and we'll know by this fall when the federal budget season starts on October 1st, we'll have a good idea probably later summer, September, as to what the politics are of the extension of the tax cuts and some of the other policy decisions. And then we'll have a good idea come then. We're already going to be quarter one into FY26. I think looking out to 27 at the state budget, and then 28 is, I think, really the year to look at down the road. Everything always takes a couple years for what they do in DC to filter down to the local level, just like the inverse, if they have a big, you know, like the Inflation Reduction Act was celebrated for a lot of reasons that are good. But usually that takes 2 or 3 years or longer for us to actually realize those savings in federal law at the local level. So it usually has a delay of a couple years. So I hope that helps illustrate, you know, because everybody, every day people ask me the same thing. Oh, is this grant going away? Or what about this money, the EPA? No money is in the budget here from the federal level, so people can rest assured about that. You know, I think the last thing I'll say really quickly is, as I was saying to Steve actually earlier, you know, things are going to be okay. You know, we've got a great community. We've got a great state. You know, Beacon Hills, you know, does have some tricks up their sleeve, I'm sure, at some point. They do have a large rainy day fund that they will probably patch some of these budget gaps. They'll probably make some policy changes. But, you know, I do think we have a good commitment from Beacon Hill and Rep. Roy and Senator Rausch in others. You know, the House budget just came out with better numbers than we would have thought. I think the Senate budget will come out with better numbers than we thought. So even though we're hearing all this bad news down in DC and we're not sure what's what, because I don't always know what's what either, you know, I think things are right now actually fairly stable here in our local budget. So that's actually pretty good news.
If I could, sorry, I just want to make sure I'm understanding some of what you were saying, Mr. Helen. To paraphrase it, you know, your concern with around Medicare and Medicaid services has to do with the structure of that program, where some of the money that goes into it is federal, some of it is state. And, you know, there's concern that if some of the federal goes away, that Massachusetts, you know, would choose to plug that gap, let's call it, because they would need to. And there's a concern that some of that comes away from education.
Yes to everything you said. If you take, if even the even if the federal government decided to cut half of our appropriation, Massachusetts then has to make up $8 billion right. in its budget for Medicare and Medicaid. Then also think the next domino. Then people don't have health care in a state that legally requires health care. The feds do now, too, to most extents, right? But so then you all of a sudden have a domino effect of
and it pulls from everything
right.
else.
Right. Yeah. And so yeah. I got to imagine at some point, folks on Beacon Hill, the executive branch, are going to look at what changes need to be made. Do they need to do income qualifications? Do they need to do a high deductible under MassHealth? Like, there's going to be a whole, I would imagine they're going to try to be creative, because I don't think there's any way that they can't be creative. They're going to be likely in a situation. And again, this is perspective. I know we read the newspaper, but Congress still has not acted.
Right. So, no. So nothing has happened
just
yet.
For people that may be watching at home, yeah, I think in a year or two we'll see later on this year what those cuts might be. But I think the state's going to have to figure out how to patch that budget gap for the state budget, and what effect that has on us down at the local level is far from, obviously being seen right now. But
right.
I think we can all kind of generally see where that boat's going.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that I was. That A, I was understanding it correctly, and that we were all kind of on the same page with why we have the concerns that we do for down the road, despite the fact that nothing concrete, you know, has happened yet.
That's right.
Everybody, just one note: we're upstairs tomorrow night. We're up on the third floor conference
room
instead of here. Training
third
room upstairs. Mr. Sherlock.
Mr. Chair, Steve Sherlock, 13 Magnolia. Old address is coming back, sorry. that was one budget discussion, respectfully. There were two other budgets supposedly on the agenda. You haven't even mentioned them at all.
Oh,
now, granted,
yeah,
there's nobody here, but...
That's my fault. They're pretty much the Norfolk Aggie and Tri-County. Would you like to just...
He's not the superintendent of that.
I'm responsible for a few schools, but those are not too many.
You're the biggest school guy we got, so...
Yeah, right.
I mean, the numbers are pretty flat. If you look at Tri-County, this is separate from the debt exclusion. Their number went down by about 2 students. And just so folks know, both the Aggie and... the Tri-County School are based on assessments, so it's based on the enrollment. So it's always delayed a year, essentially. But their numbers went down slightly. I think the Aggie went up 1 student, so it's a de minimis change in either. This has nothing to do with the school project.
But no, right. That's old. All right, sorry about that. Anything else that I missed? Motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Good job. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.